good evening. Thank you for, thanks to all of the RAC members who heeded my request to be here promptly, because we were going to start right on time, and then, of course, we had enough stuff getting things organized, so sorry we're a few minutes late, but I am calling the meeting to order, our July meeting of the Writers Advisory Council. The agenda you have in front of you, we have a couple of speakers tonight. For some reason, I have last month's... I have the right agenda in front of me. We have a couple of speakers tonight, and then we will have public comment period, which we have no public commenters right now, and then go on to our regular business that we typically have every month. So let me get my version of the agenda, which was right on top until... Well, this is really great. I was handed a lot of things to hand out, and now my version of the agenda is nowhere to be found. No, it had everything I was going to say. The one that had all my notes. This is really embarrassing. It was, here it is. Okay, no, I'm going to turn it over to Bob for introducing our first speaker and tell what that's about, and then we'll get going.
Well, good. Tonight is safety night.
Yes.
Tonight is really safety night, which is, you know, I think what the issue we've been hearing always from people at Metro, that's the most important issue that riders and the system face. I know that the members of RAC have wanted to hear from more people about safety, and I think we're lucky to have a couple of very, very good people here tonight. But I'm just going to introduce one. Steve Blackstone, who sits at the end of the table, is the state and local liaison at the National Transportation Safety Board. Steve has been there since 1983, so probably knows more about safety than anyone there, or thinks he knows more about safety.
No.
Anyway, in addition to a long career at NTSB, Steve, before he went there, worked on Capitol Hill for a couple of members of Congress and a couple of congressional committees, and is a very very experienced guy. One secret that he told me, and I'm not supposed to tell you this because it's a secret, but I'm going to tell you anyway, because I think it's important as you hear his presentation and think about some of the questions you might ask him. Steve is also a volunteer firefighter, and Steve is going to talk about what happened at La Fond Plaza, and if things happen when you're on the Metro, like happened at La Fond Plaza, you want to make sure you have a lot of good firefighters available. So let me introduce Steve Blackstone.
Thank you very much, Bob, and thanks to all of you for having me here. I've known Bob for a long time, and in him you have a tremendous resource who knows a lot about...
You said 100 years when you talked to me.
Well, we're trying to be gracious.
Steve and I were both about 15 or 16 when we started our careers in Washington.
Yeah, something like that. So, but anyway, then Bob, you have a great resource. One both knows transportation and also knows government and knows his way around how to find things in government agencies. Let me start, for those of you who are not familiar with the National Transportation Safety Board, we're the federal agency that investigates major transportation accidents in all modes of transportation, rail, highway, aviation, marine, and so on. Our responsibility is to investigate the accident, determine the cause of the accident, and then to make recommendations on how to prevent the accident from happening again. We are not a regulatory body. We strictly investigate, make recommendations to others, such as WMATA, on how to prevent the accident from happening again. And those recommendations really are our most important product. As I suspect all of you know, on January 12, 2015, at about 3:15 p.m., a Metro Rail train stopped after encountering heavy smoke while it was traveling south from the L'Enfant Plaza Metro Station, which, by the way, L'Enfant Plaza is where NTSB offices are. So this one hits very close to home with us. Passengers were trapped on the train and exposed to smoke for an extended period of time. And as a result of the accident, one person died and 91 people were treated at medical facilities. Of those 91, 89 suffered smoke-related injuries. So, the investigators found that the origin of the smoke in the tunnel was about 1,100 feet in front of the stopped train number 302. It resulted from an electrical arcing event near the third rail. And this picture shows what was left of the jumper cables and the cover board over the third rail after the arcing. The point of origin of all this was at the base of a ventilation fan shaft and a drainage pump and an emergency exit platform. Have any of you ever walked in the tunnels or are familiar with the tunnel infrastructure of Metro? I see one hand over there. Okay. Well, periodically in underground sections, there are vent shafts that are also serve as emergency exit stairwell. So that's where this occurred. And there's a lot going on at a place like that, which is where this happened. Our investigators observed an area where the third rail components and portions of the third rail cover board had been damaged and consumed almost entirely by this arcing. About 16 feet of heavy-duty cable, and we're talking cable that's like this thick, was consumed, and about 5 feet of the cover board over the third rail was consumed. And that was what created so much smoke. After the accident, we examined the connectors that joined the cables together to the third rail in a number of locations throughout the system, and we found many of them were not maintained in accordance with WMATA's own engineering design specifications. And this even includes the ones that had been replaced after the accident at L'Enfant Plaza. Many of them were missing heavy rubber sleeves that go over them that serve as a sealing sleeve to protect them from the elements, which was to us a serious shortcoming. We also found in the tunnels that Metro lacked an effective water leak inspection program, as well as a way of prioritizing work based on what was the most severe problems. The photograph you see here was taken at the location where the L'Enfant Plaza arcing event occurred the night after the incident. We found water in the track bed. The surrounding tunnel was wet and had stains and corrosion, which are indicative that water had been there for a long time. And water intrusion near the arcing event was something that Metro had known about for years leading up to the accident. It had been flagged in multiple inspection reports as early as 2010. And at the time of the accident, there was a work order concerning fixing the water leakage at this location that had been open for about 7 months. We also found that it was not unique to this point in the system. Water intrusion is a widespread problem throughout the Metro Rail tunnels, and some of that is a natural phenomenon. Wherever you have something deep underground, you're going to have water. The Bethesda station, where I typically commute from, is notorious for having water in the tunnels because it's so far underground. And it's been an area that numerous oversight reports have identified as a matter of significant concern. Let me change direction a little bit now, go from water to talking about smoke ventilation. The older part of the tunnel ventilation system, including the section where this accident happened, is not sufficient. The ventilation is not sufficient to move smoke in the case of fire, which is something we saw on this day. The original design objective of the system was not to remove smoke, but rather temperature control. So it was done for a very different purpose. The system was originally designed in the 1960s and 70s, so it's a very old design. After that, the National Fire Protection Association adopted standards for ventilation systems in tunnels, and which made the system that was in place in Metro out of date. WMATA did commission a series of studies on ventilation system in the 80s and 90s that showed that the system would not be sufficient to remove smoke in case of fire at many different locations throughout the system, especially in areas where you have steeply inclined tunnels that are heading either down from a hill or up from a hill, up from a, a lower area. The studies proposed a variety of different ways to improve the ventilation system, and WMATA explored some of these proposed solutions, but eventually chose not to adopt any of them. So as a result, the ventilation system today is the same as it was when it was first designed and built in the 60s and 70s. The second part of, the problem related to smoke is with smoke detection. Just as you have smoke detectors in your house, it is also important to have smoke detectors in WMATA so you can quickly tell where the source of smoke is coming from. In today's metro system, their smoke detectors are present only in the stations, in the fan shafts, such as the ventilation shaft I showed you earlier, and at power substations. There are no smoke detectors in the tunnel segments themselves. And often in the past, Metro has relied on train operators to report smoke or fire locations inside a tunnel. This to us was a very serious concern, which led us to make some urgent recommendations to Metro regarding addressing the lack of smoke detection systems within a month after the accident had occurred. Those are some of the engineering type issues that we identified in the course of our investigation. But we also looked at a number of operational concerns, starting with the Rail Operations Control Center. And I'll stop here and ask a question. How many of you have actually been out to Landover and seen the Operations Control Center, or OCC? I would highly recommend that you see if you can arrange a field trip to go out and look at OCC. It's for one thing, it's just very interesting to see how it all works and the voices that you hear on the PA system, what it looks like on the other end of the announcement. So, but you will learn a lot about how Metro operates, how they control their trains, and what's really going on there. But you should also ask questions about how do they handle emergencies or unusual situations. That happens every day. They have lots of those kinds of situations. Typically, though, not of the magnitude at L'Enfant Plaza. As I said, it's continuously staffed 24 hours a day. And they control the signals, the switches, the power to the train, and they also, that's the place where announcements are made. In our investigation, we found at least five different issues related to the control center, which taken together created some significant problems in response to the incident, in the response to the incident after the arcing happened. Whenever there's a major incident, OCC is responsible for the initial notification of emergency responders. In this case, it would have been DC Fire Department. OCC knew that a train was stopped in the tunnel south of L'Enfant Plaza, but that information was not clearly or quickly relayed to DC Fire Department. There was a 7-minute delay between the time when a Metro Transit police officer radioed to his communications center saying that there was smoke on the train, people were having trouble breathing, and there's a fire, and this is an emergency, we need to deal with it. 7 minutes later, OCC reported to DC Fire there's smoke in the L'Enfant Plaza station. We were never able to figure out what was happening during that 7 minutes, why it took so long to make the notification, or why the message that was delivered was different than the message that the police officer had reported. By the way, what Bob and Barbara are handing out now is a synopsis of the report, our NTSB's investigation report. The whole report is several hundred pages long, but this will give you the quick and dirty on that. So, while we weren't able to figure out what was going on, the one thing that did become clear to us was that the operators and supervisors at the OCC were not proficient and not trained and able to handle an emergency situation of this magnitude. We found they didn't have a written procedure for operating ventilation fans in response to a smoke or fire event, nor did they have training for the operators on how to use the ventilation fans. The ventilation fans that are in the system are controlled at the OCC. They're not controlled locally, although there are switches that would enable a station manager or firefighter to do that if necessary. But the basic premise of the system is it's going to be centrally controlled. During this incident, and if you look at this diagram here, it's important, the source of the smoke was in front of the train where the red where the red dot there is the bottom of it, and you can see where the train is, the gray is indicated in gray, about 450 feet off the station. And then you can see where the station itself is, where a second train actually pulled in during the course of the event. The fans were activated in such a way as to blow smoke across the train and into the station. So they, in essence, they turned them on the wrong way. They can either put them in exhaust or intake, but in this case, they did it, set it up in such a way that they blew the smoke to the people rather than away from the people. This, again, led to us within a month after the accident urgently recommending that Metro address its procedures for handling these kinds of things. Metro's safety rules and procedures book, which you see a picture of here, outlines operating procedures to use. In all instances of fire and smoke reported in tunnel, the standard operating procedure is that the supervisor is to stop all trains in all directions. However, what we found, and I mentioned this before, is it's common practice to use a revenue train when there's this report of smoke or fire to have the train operator look to see what the source is, exactly the opposite of what the procedure is called for. You're driving a train full of people into the problem. If Metro had, and this was true at the time of the accident, I believe since then Metro has changed that practice, although I'll let people from Metro speak more directly to that. If they had followed their procedures at the time of the incident, this never would have happened. All we would have heard about was delays on the yellow line because of smoke at L'Enfant Plaza Station. So the third area that I want operational area to talk about is in terms of radio communications. In Metro, there are two communication systems, one for Metro employees, such as the transit police, and they use that for day-to-day operations. The second system is to be used by emergency responders, fire department, to be able to communicate when they're dealing with emergency. In the case of the L'Enfant Plaza incident, the day-to-day system that Metro employees routinely use worked fine, just as it usually does. However, the system intended for the fire department failed. What ultimately happened was the fire department was using runners to run from to relay messages from one place to another, and which is a remarkably inefficient system, particularly in today's society with today's level of technology. The problem had been identified several weeks prior to the incident. They were working on trying to solve it, and the radio problem was solved several weeks after the incident. Since then, DC Fire Department and the other fire departments in this jurisdiction have gotten much better about testing radios, their radios on a regular basis in subway stations. So that is certainly one improvement that has come out of this accident. Finally, I want to talk a little bit about management and oversight, and this is probably the most important part of the investigation. Safety oversight and management is handled as a multi-layered approach at Metro. First, there is Metro's management that is responsible for the day-to-day operations and responsible for maintaining safety within the system. Then there is the Tri-State Oversight Committee, or TOC, which is an independent body that was created for the purpose of being a safety overseer. And then finally, there's the federal government in the form of the Federal Transit Administration. When we looked at at all three elements of these systems, we found fundamental flaws with each of them. So I want to walk through this a little bit. When we last looked at Metro in any depth was in 2009 following the Fort Totten accident, which I assume all of you are familiar with. We looked at their organizational capacity and their organizational safety culture at that time. And then we found numerous deficiencies to the point that we included the lack of safety culture in our probable cause of the accident. That was one of the causes that we determined. So we again looked at safety culture and safety oversight in the course of this accident. And although Metro WMATA has taken several steps since 2009 to address the safety culture, it really has not changed adequately. As a result, some of the specific hazards that we found in 2009 were still there, had been allowed to continue and develop since then. Many of the shortcomings organizationally and culturally that we found are still there. So little or no progress has been made in 6 years in addressing this cultural issue, which it illustrated to us the importance of there being an external safety oversight presence, somebody from the outside who can look in and say, you need to be doing this or addressing that issue. And that agency is the Tri-State Oversight Committee. It was established in 1997 between the three jurisdictions, D.C., Maryland, and Virginia. But it's a unique body in that, and every other major transit system in the country has a comparable body, a state oversight body. This is the only area where you have one that's controlled by three jurisdictions. Every other one is a single state entity, even in those few places where you have a transit property that operates in two states. As was designed, the TOC was supposed to adopt a system safety program that establishes a relationship between itself and Metro and specifies the requirements that WMATA is to follow. It was to have been certified by the Federal Transit Administration as the oversight agency. To this date, it never has been able to meet the standards and requirements of FTA and has never been certified by FTA. So the TOC right now has no enabling legislation or regulations that have been adopted mutually by the three jurisdictions. And I can get into that a little bit more if you like later on. It has no enforcement authority. If the TOC finds a problem and says to WMATA, you need to fix that, they have no way of enforcing that finding. And the third thing we found is that they had never conducted any independent investigations of any accidents or incidents. Every time they did it, they delegated them to Metro to investigate itself. And especially we as an independent investigative agency know how critical it is for somebody from the outside to be doing that sort of investigation. The three jurisdictions recognizing the problems and have been working on trying to come up with a replacement for the TOC, they have, in February 2014, they proposed creating a Metro Safety Commission as an independent agency that would assume these responsibilities. But the proposal didn't have any real details about how they were going to establish the legal authority or how they're going to overcome some of these multi-jurisdictional problems that had been plaguing the TOC for many years. When we held a hearing on this accident in June of last year, the TOC chairman said the earliest that this Metro Safety Commission might come into existence is 2019. In other words, we still have three more years for this, and that's at the earliest. And there are a lot of reasons for that, and it's certainly not an unreasonable assessment from our perspective. NTSB has initiated 13 investigations on the Metro system in the last 33 years, which is far more than any other transit property, including New York's subway system. Many of these investigations determined that inadequate management of the operation contributed to whatever the event was. We have previously concluded that the TOC can't perform effective safety oversight, and we concluded that again here in the L'Enfant Plaza investigation. Nor do we believe that FTA, the Federal Transit Administration, can make this proposed safety commission effective, and FTA itself does not have the tools to be able to conduct the necessary oversight. FTA has very limited resources and has always relied upon the states to do the oversight for them rather than doing it themselves. So as a result of these conclusions last September, we called on the Secretary of Transportation to transfer the safety oversight of the rail system from the Federal Transit Administration to the Federal Railroad Administration, in essence making it a commuter railroad like MARC or VRE. And Federal Railroad Administration does have a very robust oversight regulatory system that it uses on commuter rail systems throughout the country. And our view was that, and still is, that is the only way there's going to be adequate external safety oversight of the system. However, fairly quickly after that, Secretary Fox said that he didn't agree with that recommendation, that he was going to ask FTA to directly take oversight responsibility for Metro Rail. As I said before, unfortunately, FTA does not have resources. It does not have inspectors and does not have people that it can put on the ground to do the kind of oversight that's necessary. They began to ramp that up. They pulled in a bunch of employees from other places within DOT. They detailed a bunch of inspectors from the Federal Railroad Administration and other places to come in and do that job. However, they said they're only going to do it on a temporary basis until the states are able to come up with a system. We're not sure what temporary means since it's been indicated to us it'll be at least 2019 before any sort of state system can be put into place. FTA has no prior experience with doing this sort of thing. And perhaps most important, FTA really has no tools to impose its will upon Metro. It can make recommendations. It can give Metro orders. It can use the bully pulpit, apply political pressure. But if Metro fundamentally disagrees with FTA on a matter, there is no, the only tool that FTA has would be to withhold grants that it gives to Metro for its operations or other expenses, which is a self-defeating tool. You're saying to Metro, I want you to do something, now I'm going to take away from you the money you need to do it with. So I don't think that's really an adequate sanction. Whereas the Federal Railroad Administration, for example, if a train operator commits a violation, they can take action against that individual train operator. Or if there's a maintenance problem, they can take individual action against the people who committed the maintenance violation. That's something that nobody right now can do at Metro. So we continue to believe that the Federal Railroad Administration is the only effective way to oversee Metro's rail safety efforts. Metro certainly has taken a number of very aggressive steps in recent months to try and solve some of the specific problems. But fundamentally, we're left with an agency that's facing some very serious challenges, very long-standing problems. And there's nobody with the adequate ability to oversee Metro's efforts to address these challenges or to provide an independent point of view on how they ought to be doing it. And with that, I'll conclude my remarks and just say that I look forward to hearing your thoughts about some of these issues that confront Metro.
Thank you very much. Appreciate the time you've taken. one thing I didn't mention at the start of the meeting, we have a very aggressive agenda tonight. And they're used to me saying, hey, we only have time for so many questions. And I just urge all of you to police yourselves and that we have one question. And we all know how to count, so we'll know when one is over. And one question or comment that you can make. And to be as brief as possible, because one of the carrots put in front of you is that toward the end of the meeting is when we're going to start tonight with our ideas and updates that we would like to send to the chairman of the board with the new process that you heard about last month. So if you want to do that part, we have to be brief. We have to be speedy in this part. So I know there have been two people that have been wanting to speak even during the presentation, or they've expressed their interest. So I'll start with Colin. He'll be a really good example. I didn't notice who was first. I just noticed you're both up there. Okay, he defers to Denise.
While you're moving the microphone, I'll say also I'm very willing to try and touch base with you after the meeting or at another time. If you have questions, we can certainly follow up with you.
I appreciate that. So if we cut people off, then we can also have them submit their questions and we can send them.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's wonderful. Thank you. Denise.
Good evening. Thank you for your presentation. My name is Denise Clark, representing the state of Maryland. I have a question. At the time of the L'Enfant Plaza incident, is it standard protocol at that time for the Metro Transit Police to call OCC and not the fire department when they see smoke in the tunnel or on a train?
If the transit police see smoke or anything, that they then communicate with their own police dispatchers. And that was part of the problem is the transit police have their communications center, the rail operations people have their communications center. They are separate, and somewhere between the two communications center, the message got garbled and it took a long time. But no, they communicate with their own police dispatchers.
Colin.
Okay. Well, thanks for that presentation. I hope most of that wasn't news to all of us around the table. But you know, a couple things did stand out to me, and I've been reading about this. This is the 13th NTSB report on Metro since '82, as you mentioned, there was like a six-year gap between 2009 and you know, the finding that Metro hadn't met all the previous recommendations from NTSB.
But there were a couple of other smaller investigations between 2009 and this.
Okay. We've got the TOC, which clearly wasn't doing its job, and also seems to have lacked transparency, given most of the reports seem unnecessarily redacted. And so I guess my question is, what does ideal oversight really look like with a system like Metro, and why, if NTSB and other federal entities knew that they were not meeting their obligations to deal with these recommendations between, say, 2009 and 2016, was no one really sounding the alarm?
Well, we certainly sounded the alarm in 2009 and have made statements in the meantime since then. I suspect statements that were quickly forgotten, shall we say. In terms of what ideal oversight looks like, it for one thing, it needs to be knowledgeable of the system and needs to have the ability to look at all parts of the system, and secondly has the ability to, when it makes a finding, to make it happen, if you will. I suppose, and again, I suppose a good example is the Federal Railroad Administration. If FRA finds that a train operator has blown a red signal or is driving his train too fast, they can take action against that train operator. The Federal Aviation Administration, if they find an air traffic controller has missed something, they then can take action, corrective action, against that controller. So the two things are, one is being knowledgeable, and two, having the power to do something about it. As I said in my comments, a part of the problem is the unique nature of Metro, because it is the only tri-state entity in the country. And we went and met with the secretaries of transportation from both Maryland and Virginia. They both are very interested and sincerely want to create something, but you run into fundamental problems that neither state is willing to delegate its sovereign jurisdiction to the other. The people in Maryland are not necessarily willing to let Virginia DOT dictate what is or is not going to happen at the Silver Spring Metro Station, vice versa. And DC, of course, has a very strong interest as well. Part of that goes to the fact that you really almost have two different types of systems here in DC. For the suburban jurisdictions, it's much more a commuter railroad. People use the system to go into the city and come back out of the city. In Washington, DC itself, people use it as a routine means of transportation. They use it to go to the grocery store or to get around town. The stations are much closer to one another. People are much more reliant on transit itself. And so you really have two different, fundamentally different sets of expectations and operations between the suburbs and the city. There's nothing wrong with that, but it's just the reality of when you have a system designed the way this one is.
Thank you. I'll take the two more questions because then I think we have to move on to give our next speaker a chance. So
I'm very anxious to hear him. So.
Yeah, I know. Joseph.
Thank you so much. I was wondering, I know there may be management or oversight deficiencies that may need to be remedied before more progress can be established, perhaps, but what are some promising practices that are currently planned or implemented or should be planned and implemented by WMATA, and how can we empower more riders to take safety into their own hands as well? And I know 2019, you said that this timeline is not unreasonable. What are some steps that WMATA can be taking now to accelerate that process or get to a faster timeline?
Yeah. I think what we see is fundamentally a cultural problem. Now, having said that, culture is a very difficult thing to change. It's been there for a long time. It's going to take a long time to change. And the example I often use from the highway safety world, and you're much too young to remember this, but Bob is not. There was a time when almost nobody wore seatbelts in their cars. And today, seatbelt use rate is close to 90%. That is a cultural change. It started in the 1980s, and we're now 30 years later, and we've seen that change. We've seen huge changes in cultural attitudes towards smoking and drinking and things like that, which took decades, and that's what it's going to take. Some of the things that Metro has done, at least since 2009, is they've implemented a confidential safety reporting system. So an employee can submit, file a report that says, I saw this problem or this practice and do it, or I screwed up, I made this mistake, and they can submit those things confidentially so that Metro can get a handle on without necessarily people feeling reprisals. I can't offer you any assessment as to how effective it is, what the employees think about it, whether it's working or not, but at least they have made that step. Certainly that's an important thing. They've developed an employee engagement survey. They have worked on developing a system safety program plan, which is basically looking at the whole safety from the whole systems approach, every part of the operation. And they have created a database for safety management information. So those are some of the things that when you talk about system safety plans, you normally would talk about. I would encourage, in senior management to keep promoting those kinds of things and pushing them. One of the other things which we've seen, which isn't directly addressed here, is although it is a large amount of what you might call stovepiping. Different parts of Metro don't necessarily talk to each other, don't necessarily know well what the other parts are doing. The rail people don't necessarily know what the bus people are doing. The maintenance of way people may not always be talking to the operations people, who may not be talking to the station managers. We certainly saw that in a microcosm in this accident. There was a lot of confusion. There always is in a big emergency situation, but there's a lot of unnecessary confusion. You all should be advocates. You should be out there pushing Metro management to make safety a priority. And it will come at sometimes at costs. We're seeing that right now. We're seeing huge inconvenience in order to make maintenance type improvements to the system. And that's the kind of thing that's needed. Often Mr. Lavin may talk about this later. In New York at one time, where he came from, there was a huge debate which basically came down to service versus safety. And the safety people were trying to do things, and the people who were trying to make the trains run on time were not happy because the safety people were making it more difficult for them to run the trains on time in the basis, most simple terms. And then the last thing I guess I'd say is learn more about the system. Learn as much as you can. Go visit the Operations Control Center. See if you can arrange to actually go walk in the tunnels and see what those emergency walks are like. There is a platform on every tunnel where passengers can walk in an emergency, like this one, if they need to escape. In some places, they are much better than others. So.
Hi, good evening. Thank you.
Sure.
And great information. We, as you might have heard, we started our new safety committee. We had our first initial meeting, so it's in infancy, setting up some of the administrative tasks. Since you offered, I would like to take advantage of meeting with you again at your convenience.
Sure.
And just real quickly, a few things on what we as the RAC Safety Committee can do to help. Possibly reaching out to the OCC and getting a tour for that safety committee as a group. And last but not least, I wanted to mention the homework that I did prior to our first safety committee included looking through some NTSB documents, and above and beyond what you had already mentioned, in NTSB 2005 most wanted was make mass transit safer, which was not only for the Metro but also mm-hmm. for the bus. And I want us to not forget that we also have the bus system, as well as the NTSB 2016 most wanted for improving rail transit safety oversight. So I want to bring that to light with our safety committee and take the opportunity to follow up with you at some point.
Absolutely. Yeah, and that 2016 most wanted list item really is about this sort of thing. It talks in terms of rail safety, but this certainly is very much a part of it and was driven in large part by this accident.
Thank you for your time.
Sure.
Thank you again. Now, should we rely on Bob for your contact information or Joy so that we can, if we have additional questions, then we can get them to you.
I'll make sure I leave a business card.
Great.
But Bob knows where to find me.
Great. Yeah, I figured he might. Thank you very much again. Thank
sure,
you very
thank
much.
Sure,
thank you. No. Okay, now, before I introduce Mr. Lavin, I would like to introduce one other person that's with us tonight. You might have noticed there's a woman, a very distinguished-looking woman, sitting in the back of the room. I would like to introduce her. Her name is Carol Carmody, and she is one of the brand-new WMATA board members from the federal sector. She was appointed to Metro just in June, just last month. She did serve for 5 years as a member of the National Transportation Safety Board, was appointed vice chair by President Clinton, and served twice as acting chairman. And she's now retired from the government, but I'm gathering she's staying pretty busy. And I believe she's chairing the board's safety committee, even though she's brand new. So she's here tonight to learn about us, and we'll talk a little bit more about that later, about the whole program of the board visiting us. So thank you again, Mr. Blackstone, and Mr. Lavin. By the way, I want to tell you all, it's Pat Lavin, not Patrick. I mean, it's Patrick, but he's Pat, if you want to be on his good side. I'm gonna before he even starts, I'm going to tell you a little bit more about him, because I really think it's important. he is the chief safety officer he just started under 2 months ago. He comes from the New York City Transit Office of Safe System Safety. He brings to Metro more than 30 years experience, not 100, but he's got 30 years of experience in rail operations and maintenance, as well as safety investigations. And I saw in some bio information that he did in-depth investigations of many, many kinds. He investigated safety accidents, reports of employees falsifying their records on testing and maintenance. He's investigated bus fires and mechanical records. And he's also improved oversight, training, and maintenance practices in his work there. He worked for a long time with New York City's Signal Division, and he managed the response to signal interruptions and emergency conditions, one of which was the restoration of the signal system after the World Trade Center attack on September 11th. So we have a man here with a great deal of experience. I am personally very grateful, incredibly grateful to Mr. Riedefeld and anyone else who had a hand in bringing him here. So welcome to you, Mr. Lavin.
Thank you. What I'd like to say to that gracious opening is that my father would be very proud to hear that. My mother might actually believe it. So that's. But thank you, and I appreciate being here. I believe the work you do is very important. It's the more people that hold your feet to the fire, the better off we are as an organization. So thank you. I'd like to speak a little bit about my past experience, because I'm sure you have questions. And Mr. Blackstone is much more prepared than me. I don't have a PowerPoint for you. I'd rather just speak to you. Like Barbara said, I have 33 years experience in New York City Transit. I spent the first 20 years within the Division of Signals, so I understand maintenance, testing, and inspection practices better than most people. And if you look at high-achieving safety organizations that improve safety culture, you'll generally see a cross-pollination between your operations and your safety people. I can tell you that's the model at New York City Transit. That's the model you see at SEPTA and other high-achieving safety groups, because you need people with detailed knowledge of your operations if you're going to achieve an adequate level of safety. Now, you have some of those individuals in your safety department now. I don't believe you have it at the level that you need. And that's one of the things I identified in my first 58 days here. Today is 59, I believe. So that's one of the things I'm building. And I'd like to get a dedicated accident investigation team. They will be nowhere near the level of competency and professionalism as the NTSB. But as an organization, you should have the ability to semi-independently investigate your own accidents, draw conclusions, and come up with your own strategies on how to mitigate them. Now, I heard discussions earlier about state oversight and federal oversight. If you get to a point where a high-achieving safety organization, your oversight should be a partner with you. They shouldn't be prescriptive to you. You should be working cooperatively. And the way you do that is by performing well, so we need to get to that place. I spent the last 13 years of my career, because I actually have 33 years at New York City Transit. As an accident investigator, I ran the accident investigation unit. I've investigated collisions, derailments, employee fatalities, and a variety of near misses. And to add to what Mr. Blackstone said about a close call reporting system, we've had a robust near miss, we call it near miss in New York reporting system. It's an excellent way to surface problems. It's an even more valuable tool to help you mitigate problems, because then you identify what the root causes of problems are, and a lot of these things are behavioral. And I can give you an example of this. As part of the SafeTrack surge, we identified, because we have safety embedded in SafeTrack to make sure everything's performing properly, we had identified several instances where employees had taken guards off of grinders. So when we looked at it, we asked the question, you know, it's one thing if you sit in your car and you don't put on your seatbelt. That's an act where you don't have to do anything. If you're performing an act where you're physically removing a cover from a grinder, that takes more work to do. So then the question is why am I going through the effort of removing a grinder that creates work to make it less safe? And the answer is that some of the grinders, they needed a 7-inch grinding wheel, and they only had a 5-inch grinder with a five, you know, therefore couldn't accommodate a 7-inch blade. So we went the next day, we got a Granger catalog, and we bought them the correct tools for the job. Those are the things you should be looking at, and that's just a small-scale example. One of the other things I'd like to say is that one of the reasons I accepted the position here is because of the leadership of the GM. Now, I don't think I would have taken it had he not given such a strong priority to safety. And within my first week here, we were able to make substantial changes with regards to empowering employees, but just because you empower somebody, that doesn't mean they immediately act on it. And like Mr. Blackstone said, that's something we have to build. And that's something, safety culture takes time. It doesn't change overnight, but it can change. And the reason I say that is because I've lived it. When I started working at New York City Transit in 1983, we experienced a mainline derailment on an average of every 28 days. The place was in such a tremendous state of disrepair that every commuter knew about six different ways to get to work because the system was so unreliable. So with the right leadership, the right funding, and the right professionalism, we were able to turn that around. We're probably one of the best performing transit agencies in the country, if not the world, and we were actually recognized in a magazine or a book of one of the top 15 in the world. I'd like to bring that experience here and start moving the needle in a different direction. So I think I'm done talking about myself. So if you'd have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
And oh,
why did I know Colin would be first?
I in advance of the meeting, I warned him that Colin inquired of Mr. Evans last month. He asked, why should we believe that things will be better with SafeTrack? And so I warned him it might be, why should we believe that now that you're here, although we know we do have a new chairman and a new GM, and, you know, I'm personally really happy with both of them. And so I don't know what he's going to ask, but I will give him a chance.
Thanks for coming. At board meetings, you've mentioned that you are conducting sort of a holistic review of Metro's power systems, which were, of course, you know, contributing factor in the arcing incident, and you know, we've heard anecdotally that there are issues with, you know, 8-car trains and, you know, power issues with that. So I'm wondering if you can give us a sort of an update on what you're finding through that process right now.
Well, first, I'm going to answer that by saying, as an investigator, I hate talking about an open investigation, but I'll do it anyway because you deserve that. I have my staff, about 7 or 8 people, I dedicated to focus on this issue. So one of the things that we're finding now is that, and there's several different areas we're looking at. It's not just one area. We're seeing that there may be, and I'll couch that by saying maybe, some issues with the quality assurance process for the insulators that are coming in. So we're looking at that. We're getting those lab tested. As some of you may be aware, there was an incident the other day at Gallery Place where a fastener ignited. So I had gone there that night. I had them cut the plate out. We sent that plate for lab testing. So one of the things we're finding is potentially you could be getting corrosion on the other side of the plate, which is eating away the rubber, which is your insulating property. So what we're going to do is we're going to sample 5 additional plates on either side of that and see if we can establish a useful life cycle of replacing these if it's warranted. This is all ongoing activities. In addition to that, we also did what's called Russell corrosion testing in that station, and that identifies all the fasteners that are going to ground. So we're looking at that program to see, you know, what extent we're doing it, what extent should we be doing it. I also have them doing local measuring of cables in that area, which basically tells you what the insulation resistance is on those cables. So if you take that one incident as a snapshot, you can kind of get pretty good ideas of where you can take this on a more global perspective. So let's assume that we find that these plates have a useful life of 25 years. Then we start forecasting this through a capital program and say, okay, let's identify this proactively and start replacing them before they get to their useful life cycle. We're also, I'm looking at the maintenance and testing practices of how they do the inspection of the third rail. Is it sufficient? Is it efficient? How can we do it better? And as part of that, what we're doing is this APTA peer review, which should be occurring the week of July 25th to the 29th. And we're taking experts in from different parts of the country, from Boston, Chicago, New York, who have large systems with traction power issues, and we're trying to get the best practices from them. And we also want them to look at our practices to see if they, you know, if we believe we're taking every approach we can to addressing this problem.
Great. And will you be releasing the findings of your...
What I intend to do is I'll probably be releasing immediate findings as I get them in some type of organized fashion as the report progresses. You're welcome.
And before I take any other questions, we comprehend that there are going to be some questions maybe that you aren't at liberty to answer for whatever reason. There's an investigation ongoing or confidentiality. And so I probably should have told you before the questions that this is a broadcast meeting. So it can, there can...
I'm aware of that.
Good.
And I don't know is a good answer, too, so if I don't know, I'll just tell you.
No, I just didn't want to take any chances that, you know... Okay, so thank you. Clarence.
So one of the things that we heard from the NTSB... So one of the things that we heard from the NTSB presentation, and one of the things that's been an ongoing trend, is being both the maintenance end, but then also the operational staffing end, in terms of that miscommunication and the lines of how information is transferred not being very efficient. How is that playing in terms of part of SafeTrack? Is there part of the, because I know we get a lot of information regarding like what's physically happening in the tunnels, but I kind of want to know, from your side, is there any changes happening organizationally in terms of how Metro functions and communicates, whether that's between the fire department and Metro, between the station managers and the control center? What is that sort of plan of attack on that end? Because it seems to have like a big impact in terms of how the agency is able to respond to emergencies that come up.
Okay, that's a good question. And to answer your question, it's not unique to Metro. A lot of large transit agencies have these problems. So I don't want you thinking that this is Metro's this horrible place, and unfortunately, this is not uncommon in the transit industry. You have large, complex systems with a lot of moving parts and the human factor part of it, so there are operational issues. As far as if you want to speak specifically to SafeTrack, because I think that was, you listed about 9 things, but I'll try to get to them. So what we did is after the first surge one of SafeTrack, we did an after-action review. We identified several different areas that we felt could be improved, one of them being that we needed to use the mobile command more efficiently and more effectively. It was a better resource to keep track of all the vehicles that were out there, so that was one of the things we did. To speak to your other concerns, and I think Mr. Blackstone can attest to this, we recognize as an organization that we have to get better. So one of the things that we did is not 2 weeks ago out in Greensboro in Virginia, we had a drill where we did this coordination of activities. We've also done after action review of that drill to identify deficiencies. So we're trying to get better. We're practicing drills, and we're also doing a lot of things in the control center, which will be in the responses to the NTSB for the recommendations that they issued in the beginning of May of this year. And just so you know, I attended that hearing on May 3rd. It was the week before I started here. I wanted to come down and attend. And one of the things that you know, was kind of scathing is that the NTSB said that Metro doesn't have a learning, has a learning disability. And I took that personally, being that I'm here now. So I'd like to address that. So it's, you know, it's a process. I believe we're getting better.
Thank you. Joseph.
Thanks so much for being here, Pat. I know Hong Kong has LTE and Wi-Fi at every station, and Montreal has LTE at every station, and New York City has free Wi-Fi at hundreds of the stations, even though LTE drops off when you go into the tunnels and things like that. What can WMATA do to promote access to information at stations and in tunnels, and empower and educate everyday riders to ensure their own safety? Yeah, because I know currently that's been suspended, talks with wireless coverage at different providers. December 2015, it got halted because of SafeTrack. But with your background in signals, I'm not sure if this is relevant to your background in signals. I don't know what that entirely means. I think I'm sure you have a lot more expertise, but I don't know what signals encompasses. But I was wondering, even with the NTSB Operations Control Center, there was a delayed notification to emergency responders, a 7-minute delay. We don't know what happened. What can we do to promote better access to communication and just information during, especially during emergencies, but just everyday riders?
Okay, I'm gonna answer your signal question first.
Sure.
Signals are traffic lights for trains. So that's a simple, that was the easy one. Okay, as far as improving communications, one of the things that they instituted in the Rail Control Center is they have a fire liaison on site now. So when there's an incident, he communicates directly with the fire department. This was something that was instituted back in New York years ago. We actually have a police liaison in there because they tend to speak fire to fire as opposed to rail to fire. You need to speak the same language. So I think that improves the process of communication. As far as the public communication piece, I will, it's a very good question. Why don't you have Barbara send it to me, and I'll have someone from the communication department speak specifically to that. That's not my forte, so I'll just put that on the table.
Yeah, thank you. all right, Denise.
Good evening, and welcome to Washington, D.C. I have a question. You mentioned a peer review earlier in your talk regarding best practices from Chicago, New York City, and Philly. Is that something new to WMATA? Is that something that you brought to Metro?
No, actually, I think there's been several peer reviews, but the scope of my investigation is not limited to that APTA peer review. So that's just one component of it. But APTA is a great organization. I've actually been part of APTA peer reviews. I did a roadway worker protection peer review out in San Francisco after they had a worker fatality. So it's a valuable tool, but it's not the only tool you should have.
I'm going to take two more questions that we have, and then if it's okay, can we also, if we have follow-up questions, to send them through? We will centralize them and send them to you, not one by one.
Whatever
you need. Thank you very much. Oh, I'm sorry. You know, peripheral vision is a problem up here, and I never can remember the guy sitting next to me, so the next three comments, and then we're done. Thank you. And Christine, okay. Go ahead.
Hi, thank you for joining us and giving us the information that you just provided. To reiterate what I just spoke of in regards to the NTSB, if we have the new safety committee could meet with you as the smaller group and discuss some things. I just wanted to highlight a few of what we talked about at our very first meeting in regards to our biggest concerns, and one of them was identifying safety training for specifically to and for the passengers, how to handle an emergency situation. I personally come from a safety and technical training background in aviation, and I believe it's very important that people know how to operate emergency equipment and what to do in emergency prior to that happening. And a quick example, you know, the emergency doors say slide to open. However, if you really read what it says on the board next to the doors, that's what you do after you've been instructed by the operator as a last resort, or else you can possibly run into the third rail. Participating in the emergency drill has been a great experience for us, and one of the highlights that we've shared collectively, for those of us that participated, the operator, train operator's communication or lack of communication to the passengers. And I know a lot of times it gets blamed on the intercom system, which I understand in some trains is not going to get fixed, so that's not an option. However, there's times as a rider, when you're riding the train, as a matter of fact, on the way here, they have lots of ad-libs and lots of things to say, and that's when you can hear them perfectly. However, unfortunately, in the emergency drills, you may not be able to hear them because of the intercom, or there hasn't been that communication, which I believe is probably a lack of a standard operating procedure. So it would also, in the end, in closing, like to know what we can do as far as the safety committee from the RAC can do to help you.
Okay. Well, to answer your first question, I think it's an excellent idea because the time to learn how to open an emergency window is not an emergency. So that's an excellent idea. As far as your second question, one of the strategies that we had deployed in New York is that when you had an incident going on that some person was assigned as a customer service advocate. And that came out of, we had a snowstorm out in the Rockaways in Queens, if anyone knows the city, and they were stranded there for like over 2 hours. And because of the severity of the storm, they kind of got misplaced, for lack of a better description. So you had people on a train for 2 hours, and you had this horrible storm going on. So what we do in major events is we have a customer service advocate. So I could perhaps bring that to the Rail Control Center, or that's something we can champion here and say, okay, when we have these major events, someone needs to pay attention to the customer, make sure the announcements are made, which I believe they're doing through the comm desk, but I'll look into it further. The third thing you can do is that if you want a tour of the property, you should probably come to me and not the NTSB. So that's that I think I can help you with.
I agree. Thank you. No offense to the NTSB, of course.
I saw him writing feverishly, so I felt bad for him.
Bob.
You have the first qualification for good safety. You're very
sensitive. Not as good as yours, apparently. Yeah. Yeah, that's what it is. Better check the prescription on those glasses.
Well, so how do you, and I've had a few experiences where it didn't work that well. How do you get it all together, everybody pulling together in one direction?
Well, here's been my experience. I should probably lean back a little because that was a little loud, sorry. I get about 200 emails a day, and I generally get 5 emails about the same event. So I'll get it from the Rail Control Center. I'll get it from the Maintenance Away Control Center. I'll get it from the comm desk. I'll get it from the police liaison. And then every once in a while, I get a bus one as well. So when something gets reported, it's not an issue for it to make its way to me. So there's pretty good communication that way. As far as a safety event, you know, we're aware of them. If there's a real-time safety event, the best option you can have is to find a transit employee, whether that's the train operator on a train or a station manager, and report it. If it's so severe and so, you know, imminent hazard, then call 911, and we'll get it through that way. But if it's like, I'm going to call it a mundane hazard, like, you know, there's a water leaking and it's creating a slip hazard, then you give it to somebody from stations. I don't know if that gave you the answer you were looking for.
Yeah, I think so. Thank you. Sitsa.
Thank you so much again for your remarks and obviously your dedication and energy. We're lucky to have you.
Thank you.
I wanted to ask, so we hear a lot during SafeTrack about SafeTrack's plan to repair and upgrade the track system, the electrical system, the insulators, et cetera. But we haven't heard as much about some of the other problems that your NTSB presentation pointed out, things like, you know, the ventilators, things like water leakage, corrosion, the ability of the system to identify where smoke is coming from. Could you talk a little bit about what WMATA is doing, what the Safe Track plan is doing, to sort of address those problems as well alongside the tracks?
Well, I don't know if you can put those two in the same sentence. Mm-hmm. The Safe Track is more of along the lines of, you know, doing a lot of the preventive maintenance that hasn't occurred. So that's fixing your track, your signal systems, your cabling, you know, more of the components that are part of your infrastructure. What you're talking about when it talks about vent fans, those are things that are probably going to have to be done through capital programs. The one thing I can tell you is that I am on a group called the CPAC, which if you ask me what the acronym is, I couldn't tell you because I've been to, there's got to be like 10,000 acronyms since I got here. And my first day I said, that's NICE. But the CPAC is the capital program, something, two other things. It's a capital investments long term. So they asked me, they said, well, what is safety? How do you define safety? I said, well, to the best of my knowledge, there's 101 NTSB recommendations that were put out over the last 40 years. I said, that's the roadmap. I said, if you're looking for a direction to go, I said, follow the NTSB recommendations. I said, they're not sleek, they're not sexy. I said, but they address fire life safety. So that requires the upgrade of your vent fan so you can pull enough CFM of smoke out of tunnels. You can have sufficient egress. You can do all these other things. So when we weight our decisions on capital investments, anything that has to do with fire life safety gets weighted the heaviest. So that's, so I think it kind of just got to separate those two. Okay.
Thank you very much. Thank you. I appreciate your being here. I appreciate your candor. I am, I'm happy you're here again. And we just appreciate all of you being here. I know some of you may be leaving after this presentation, and so it's a rare opportunity that we have to have someone from the board, someone from the staff, and someone from an outside organization such as NTSB at our meeting. So we're very lucky to have you tonight, and I appreciate it very much.
I just want to point out the NTSB didn't get a round of applause. So thank you. Bob, it was nice meeting you.
Fine, thank you. Okay, back to our typical agenda. Public comment period, I believe Jill had told me we had no one signed up for public comment. I think that's correct. In person, I should say. But again this month, I have three people have sent me emails, and one delivered a letter tonight, or information tonight, I should say. So I just want to share those with you very briefly. The first email I got was very specific concerns about debris and broken lights and other maintenance issues that the stations were named, the locations of everything. So that had been forwarded to customer service. Actually, all of these do get forwarded to customer service. I responded as well, but those really belonged with customer service to take care of, to forward to the right people to get them taken care of. We had one sent an email about very regular serious delays with 80 buses. I don't know, are any of you particularly familiar with the 80 bus line? Yeah, I think it's 80. I think it's, I have to, you know, I don't know that that's the one, because I remember it's near a hospital, but at any rate, it again is a very specific situation, even though it was a recurring thing, and so it is been referred to the bus people, to customer service, for the bus people to deal with it. A third one was about late night bus service, that now that late night rail service has been suspended, that there are people that are having trouble getting around, and that there was a suggestion that we look at late night bus service, and that also went to customer service. I plan to give that to the customer committee to also include, well, in two ways, have that if the committee believes that's something that they would like to recommend on a customer service basis to do so, and also for the budget committee to consider as we're building our ideas for the next year. I honestly don't know the future. I don't remember, to be honest, if this is a temporary stoppage of late night service because of SafeTrack, or if based on the things we've heard is that there's going to be more and more SafeTrack type things. I just don't know. And don't anybody quote me on that. I don't know. But let's see. And then earlier tonight, we had a woman come in who is talking about the X3 bus. Any of you familiar with that one? That's up in, it's in Wisconsin, Minnesota Avenue, Benning Road, and that goes between those? Okay. That apparently, you know, many of you may know that bus routes can change in, a couple times a year, and just a couple weeks ago, apparently there was a change made, so it doesn't make the same stops, and it seems to be a problem to some of the people there. And just by being a bus rider, she has signatures, she has petitions, this is a demonstration, she's done some work, and she was very nice to talk to, and she stated her position about the situation and what it was and what it is, and it's asking for consideration. And she and some of the others have directed the information properly to the bus planning department, but she also wanted to give it in person so that we knew about it, and Joy is going to help me follow up on that. Yes, Clarence, sure.
So I know that when Mamata is having situations where they're talking about re-changing bus routes or whatever else like that, they have moments for public comment. I think one of the things and what's helpful that the person...
Is your mic on?
Yeah, it is. One of the things that's helpful that the person still submits a letter, because knowing where that road comes through, like the demographics of people who live there, it's sometimes very difficult for some people to set time aside to be able to go to a meeting at some other time in the afternoon or the evening. So whether or not that's something that we can take up of customer service or whatever else, thinking about how does Metro make itself available to other people to be able to contribute their information? Because I think this person took the initiative for really having the spaces, but if you're like a single parent who works a lot of hours, like I just don't have time to come to a public comment meeting, but like it still should be a way for the Metro to incorporate my ideas or my feedback from my people.
Whenever the buses are evaluated very seriously a couple times a year, and at least one of those times, there's not only public hearing. I mean, the vast majority of the input does not come in from the public hearing. It comes in by email and letters and all different ways. And they actually also have ways of notifying community members and so forth. There's a huge outreach, much of it mandated, but much of it is also it's the bus operations people. If you've ever sat in a meeting with Jim Hamry, who's the director of the bus, he wants to hear what people have to say. And they do every year when they put out their proposals and then they get their public input. There are changes that they do make because of the input. So I assured her she was going to be heard. I couldn't guarantee that there will be action, but she will be heard. And this is a lot of people compared to what we usually get is one of this and one of that. So that'll be something you'll all be exposed to later this year. So that's the public comment.
Excuse me.
Yes.
If I may ask, every time they put a public announcement, an announcement about public hearings for public comments on bus changes, bus route changes or eliminations or whatever, or rerouting or what have you, they always put information there giving you can do it this way, this other way, or this other way. And they even have also for if in other languages, if you need translators and what have you. So that is open to everybody, and they're very flexible. Actually, the hearing may be on, it's always on a specific date, but the date for submitting comments, they give you a couple of weeks or something like that, so.
Let's go on to the minutes from the last meeting. I had, between the time they went out and tonight, I have already given Joy a couple of very minor things. One was she had the attendance wrong on just one person. None of you, so don't even have to worry about that. And I also, one place where she referred to customer service, I just asked that she clarify it was WMATA customer service she was referring to, not the RAC customer service committee. So having said that, are there any corrections anyone has to the minutes? I move that we accept the minutes as amended as by my description. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Abstentions? Thank you. Passed. Thank you, Joy. Back to my notes. Now, for once, I could hear you on the microphone. Oh, well. All right, I'm going to take this next section in the opposite sequence that's listed because I wasn't sure how we would be ending on time. So what I want to start with is the executive committee meeting highlights, because of the three things, that's the thing that most directly affects us. On June 9th, I had mentioned last month's meeting that the RAC leadership team was going to be meeting with the executive committee, which is Jack Evans and the principal from each of the county, the states. And we did that. I had told you what the topics were, and I just want to talk briefly about that because I'm thinking there's nobody in this room that was at that meeting with me. Bob was at it, but he's out of the room saying goodbye to our guests at my request. So I just want to go through some highlights. We did talk, I talked briefly about the work plan. I gave them the update that I'd gathered from the committees of all the things that were on the plan, which they'd already seen, but just updates of where we were on those things. Some we'd started, some things we already had, some preliminary kinds of ideas that I informally shared what some of those ideas were. So I did that. I initiated and Bob assisted with a discussion with them on staff support and how we interact with the staff. We drew some analogies with how the Accessibility Advisory Committee works because they have some staff people, director type level, and that support them, and that now that Joy is doing on her own, as fabulous and wonderful as Joy is, there are times where she could use, well, it would be nice if she could take days off and not feel guilty, but also that there's somebody with some management responsibility that could be our spokesperson and go to staff. And another thing I brought up in that discussion was that, you know, either having more staff or the ability to do more direct interaction with the staff. And Mr. Wiedefeld's bias is still toward a liaison that not direct to direct, unless, of course, we're all in the same room at the same time, but in general that our questions go through a liaison. So so there was, Mr. Evans asked for some consideration of our request and seemed to be in favor of us having additional support. But I will say that it wasn't many days after that meeting that you probably all saw the media reports of 500 positions being eliminated. So I talked to Lynn just yesterday, Lynn Bowersox, and she indicated that, you know, with all that, it's probably going to be a few months of evaluating. They're doing things about vacancies. They're doing things about analysis and developing a process for how they even evaluate who these 500 are going to be. I think it's unrealistic. I'm unhappy to hear and unhappy to report, but it's unrealistic something's going to happen about this in the next 90 days. So we'll just keep bothering Joy until she says stop. And I try to help as much as I can because I bump into people and then I can, you know, talk to them directly. We talked about recommendations that we give to the board. I think Bob may have mentioned that some of our past ones from last year, we didn't get a very prompt answer, and that we talked
about his idea that there be a rule of thumb set about how long it would take to respond. And Mr. Evans was pretty clear that he said, you know, it might be he'll say okay right there in the room, and it might be something that he needs to go talk to people about. So he wasn't willing to put in a standard time frame, but he seemed committed to having a process that is not a slow one. And I made clear that what I was referring to with that was the formal recommendations, where we have a page or two where we've talked about the analysis we've done, like some of you saw Colin's document about the blue line recommendations that we made earlier in the year. That's we're talking about the formal one, not the informal one, which we did discuss again about sending him an email on ideas and updates. We talked about social media, and I should say that the executive meeting, it was not only members of the board, but Paul was there, Paul Wiedemann, Wiedefeld, and Lynn Bowersox were both there as well. And there were some concerns from the board expressed that were the kind that we'd heard from staff even before about the challenge of a volunteer group part-time trying to maintain a social media presence. It was not something to say against it. It was saying, are you really, you know, up to this, and do you have the people and the time and the energy to do it? And so Lynn Bowersox has offered support in terms of any input she can give or feedback on our plan, but the board members did agree that seemed to be a good thing. Thaddeus was present. I think Colin was out of town, and so he mentioned that there was a concern, I think, about Twitter, about how much time it takes to manage that. And so Thaddeus said, well, it's possible maybe the first thing would be something more like Facebook, where it's more, you know, a presence in that way. And they seem to be much more receptive to that idea. I'm not sure it was clear if it had to be one or the other, but we definitely got a positive feedback from the board members on that. And so one thing I've asked Colin to do is work with the committee, the PPP committee, and come up with a restate. We had a statement from a previous committee that has virtually nobody here this year that had prepared it to say what's his new version, what's the committee's new version of what this would be, the proposal. And I know he's working on that. And then also Mr. Evans brought up again at that meeting that he would love to have the board come and visit us. And he mentioned it also at the board meeting that day. So that's why Ms. Carmody, I think, was here tonight, because she's new and because, well, she was actually going to come in August, and then she saw it was all about safety tonight, and she's a safety person. So that's why we had one. And hopefully we'll have more, and maybe there'll be an environment where you can talk to them if they come before the meeting for part of our social time. You can actually have some interaction with them. I would normally ask any of the people that attended the meeting with me if they had anything to add, but seeing none, if you have any questions or comments or want to understand it better, please feel free to talk to me. Please reach out. So going in the backward sequence, the board meetings that were that same day after our meeting with the executive board, there was a lot to come of it. The things that I thought were most noteworthy coming out of the customer service meeting is that they did give us an extensive list, or did a presentation. Lynn did a presentation all about the outreach for SafeTrack. The finance committee had a couple of small things, small in terms of compared to the budget for the year. The board approved Kids Ride Free summer program. That was approved by the board. They also approved something you may have read about. There's going to be a bus, or maybe it's just about to start. I can't remember the details, between the National Harbor and Virginia, which I'm very happy about because it'll come near me. And the safety meeting, there was Mr. Lavin gave two reports that day. He'd been here, you know, a whole month by then. And he gave an accident report for the newer L'Enfant incident that we'd had, and also McPherson Square had an incident that he gave report on.
far as the monthly update for me, once again this month, it's not in your packet. There's a new schedule. I'm behind. I'm going to email it out by Friday. My apologies that the one for May I had written long before I remembered to send it to you. A couple of things that are going on outside our direct world. Couple of us, there was a Metro at 40 summit in the town with regional directors a few months ago that Colin and I and Bob all got invites to, and we went. And there was a second one of those that Colin wasn't able to, but Bob and I did, that we went again, where there was a very, very fascinating discussion of other systems throughout the country, and well, and Toronto as well, and what they do on a variety of things. And I have a report from that if one of you, or if you want to share it, I have something I could pass around. But we had a panel that led that day, that morning, from each of several of the biggest transportation systems in the states. And it was just very interesting hearing about their situation. One of them had a quote that I will remember. It was, they were talking about, you know, you can learn from each other. You can apply things you've done at one place to another, but each one is also unique. And what he, the message was, if you've seen one transit system, you've seen one transit system. And most there didn't have the challenges we have with the three jurisdictions. They didn't have the challenges that we have with funding. Most of them had sales tax or something to fund. So it was a good day. Very, very recently, you may have heard a little bit about WUSA Channel 9's partnership with WMATA. If you're in Amplify, you would have gotten an email about it. Plus, I think there was a press release, so it came in Metro Alerts. But they're going to be doing a series of work with WMATA, and the first thing was they called it a town hall. It was to some extent, some of the same players as were at this Metro Summit, regional transportation people. How many of you were able to see that on TV? It was televised just the other night. Nobody here. Okay, I do have the video that they sent me. I only read about it after it happened. I got behind. And question came up, they even had 16 people from Amplify. Now, is there anybody here that doesn't know what Amplify is? Raise your hand. Please be... If you know, so I'm hoping many of you are in Amplify. You don't know. It's I was actually talking to, there was a man behind you that I was playing. Yeah, then I'll tell you about it if you have time, you know, later. Okay. They pulled some writers from Amplify that seemed very engaged, that they had them attend as well. But primarily the speaking was among the regional leaders, a lot about funding and other matters, I understand. So I talked to Lynn Bowersox yesterday about that as well, and she implied that there are going to be many phases to this and there will be opportunities for us to participate. I was surprised by it, and it's about the writers as well. And go ahead, just ask your question, Colin, comment.
I guess I'm just, you know, a little miffed that Lynn and her team continue to fail to provide us with a heads up on these sorts of efforts and include us, especially given our repeated requests to involve the RAC in their planning efforts moving forward.
Are you talking about the Channel 9 thing or something else?
Yeah, the Channel 9 thing, the Metro Greater thing, sort of.
Oh, yeah. You
know, just like all their general efforts as of late.
Yeah, I share your point of view, I think.
I think that if the RAC is to be the sounding board that it is designed to be, that we ought to be involved in these efforts, not only, you know, in terms of the planning phase, but, you know, in terms of things like, you know, a town hall or, you know, just make sure someone from the RAC is there.
I agree. And I will do what I can to make something happen. I think
I don't know that this is part of it, and I'm not stating this as an issue as much as a reality, is that on more than one occasion, I've heard Mr. Wiedefeld, and you know, I think you already all know that I think the world of this man, and but he does remind us that, you know, he knows that we report to the board, and I think so the staff may want to tap some resources of their own rather than the board, but I don't know if that's a part of it. I really don't, but that occurs to me. So I like to think there's collaboration. So, but I, point well taken, I agree. I would have liked to have known about it. I think that's everything I wanted to conclude. So on to committee reports. Will is not here. Is there anyone from customer service that wants to give a report about that committee activities? Especially, I'm interested about a couple of things. There was going to be feedback on the outreach, and I haven't seen anything. We were going to send something to Lynn based on the committee's work. I'm looking at you guys because I know you're on the committee. I don't know who all is on the committee. Nothing that you know of? Anyway, are any of you prepared to give a report for customer service?
Let me see my notes.
Well, you don't know if you've assembled anything.
I submitted Will's notes, but I don't know.
Okay, that's okay. That's all right. PPP, Colin.
Yep. So, you know, again, we're in the process of coordinating with the AAC on gathering rider feedback on the 7000 series trains. Unfortunately, neither Patrick nor Valerie are present, but I think Valerie's actually on vacation. She's heading up that effort. But we, you know, we hope to be able to get the feedback and buy-in of the AAC on the questions that Valerie developed, and then move forward with you know, working with staff to put some of those out via Amplify. Let's see. We I've peppered Joy lately with a number of informational requests, which she is graciously fielding for us. Yeah, with regard to, you know, the social media piece of you know, our recommendations previously, the PPP did discuss that. You know, we haven't developed like a formal recommendation, but you know, it occurred to us that while we're still awaiting maybe some clarification from the board as to what exactly they did or did not approve in terms of allowing the RAC to move forward with a social media presence, that Facebook is probably a good place to start, given that it does require a little less perhaps real-time effort and monitoring. Although it occurs to me that you know, if we did also have a Twitter account, there's not necessarily any harm in it not, you know, in it being static from time to time. You know, that doesn't, there's no real downside to that. However, you know,
are you saying people couldn't send to you, or you just wouldn't be sending anything out, or our Twitter account wouldn't?
Yeah, I guess what I'm saying is, you know, if we're not sending something out once a day, that's not necessarily a problem.
Yeah.
So I think what I'm saying is the downsides seem fairly minimal.
Okay.
I think, you know, the other aspect of that is that it may be a little easier to develop a following on Twitter than it is to develop a following via a Facebook group. But, you know, what we talked about is kind of what the primary goal of RAC's social media presence would be, noting that, you know, we're not really aiming to fill the communications gaps that may be present, you know, on the WMATA side, but rather to engage with riders in terms of getting their input, hearing their concerns, you know, in the cases where we can direct them to resources, we can do that, but also to be clear that we are not officially representing the agency itself. We did agree that it would probably be good to have sort of a core group who kind of manages and you know monitors this and establishes some protocols to ensure that you know postings occur in a timely manner, but also that you know you have more than one set of eyes on a post before it goes out. And I think you know we also discussed that regardless of the social media platform that we utilize, we ought to be doing things like basic polls of you know writers who are following us. I don't know if anyone else on the committee had anything to add from that conversation. Sure. Microphone.
I think a possible route that might be effective is rather than at each step asking the board if they're okay with this or not, like if the committee can draft up their ideal scenario, this is what we want to do,
sure.
And then bargain and then say, like, you can't do this, you can't do this, because I do think it's just in the constant state of limbo and in terms of like, instead of asking approval, like we want to be able to have a page and like post a poll and then like, you know, have everyone who does have a Twitter account like mention that they're on the rack or, and you know, take pictures of us at a safety drill, take pictures of us going to the OOC center so that we can kind of see that face. But I think if that was more fleshed out, it'd probably get a little bit further because I don't think the board knows what they are envisioning, but it's a rack initiative. So if we say, right. This is what I want to do. You tell us what we can't do, and then jumping from there, yep. It might move a little bit faster.
I think that's a good point. And to that end, you know, if any of you have any thoughts as to, you know, it didn't occur to me, for example, that, you know, those of us who might be on Twitter individually could be able to identify ourselves as, you know, RAC members. I think that's, you know, that's an interesting idea. So, you know, please don't hesitate to give me your thoughts on that as, you know, and I think that the committee can, you know, formalize this into, you know, a document that does sort of outline what we view the components of this being.
Great. Anything else?
So the only other thing out of our committee.
Did you want to comment on that or something else?
I have a quick question, so I'll comment on that.
Just to clarify, what was the sort of timeline that we are hoping for in this in the plan to sort of roll out a social media account? And, you know, I guess what would be appropriate for the board, you know, what type of timeline were they sort of
I don't know that there is necessarily a timeline established.
There's no timeline yet.
No, but it's what do we want to do.
As soon as we are ready and they are giving us the green light.
Yeah.
But this wouldn't be something that would take hopefully too long to.
No, I wouldn't think so.
No, okay. I think we control that.
Great.
The majority of that by far.
Good.
We control.
Yeah. Do we have a target date that we're looking to aim for, maybe?
Do you want to propose one?
It's
during the summer, hopefully.
You know, that's a good point, because we do want to run stuff by, you know, the board doesn't meet in August, but that doesn't mean they're not out there. You know, Jack's out there, unless he goes to Africa for the summer. I mean, I don't know. So I don't know that there's any limitation. I think we can control that.
I guess on that question, from your own thinking about how the social media would work, is this something that we would have to run through the staff, for example? Like, does the logo for the RAC's Twitter account, like, has to be meet certain WMATA guidelines in terms of, like, what it says and that kind of information? Because, like, any one of us can create a Twitter account right now, this afternoon. But it's, like, whether or not, because we are an official part of WMATA, do we have strict guidelines in terms of things that we have to say, disclaimers that we have to write up? Maybe that might be a question we can put out to staff, saying, like, we got approval from the board.
Yeah,
tell us,
so
like,
I think that's what Lynn is envisioning, is providing us with a staff member who can give us those guidelines from WMATA's perspective.
She wants to be the contact person, but she has a lot of people at her disposal that then she can turn to.
Right.
I think her role will be as somebody we need to keep informed. If I suppose if we were to suggest something, she says, oh, well, wait a minute, there's a real problem with that, blah, blah, you know, we'll hear it. And so, but I think, you know, we are reporting to the board on this. And so hopefully, I mean, we want to do something that's going to, people are going to agree with, you know. Any more to your report?
Yeah, so the only other thing that I would note is that Joseph raised the concept of how WMATA might partner with a corporate entity to provide free Wi-Fi in stations. I think this idea is very much in its infancy, but it is something that we may be looking at. I think just starting to conduct some research on this, so it may be something we're adding to our work plan. But.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
Joseph,
briefly.
To add?
Yeah, I guess just briefly, or just what that might look like in order to explore possible partnerships with any entity to provide free services to riders. Or like hotspots, or even among like a particular line. It doesn't need to be everywhere. Just piloting among certain places, but just exploring what that might look like. And
is that something we want to include in our ideas to send to Mr. Evans?
I don't know. I don't know exactly what you envision for that.
Oh, I'll talk about that.
All right. Well, let's get to it.
Okay. Let me first go to budget. Do you want to say a little bit, Clarence, about what's going on there, just very briefly?
I want to say, first of all, I have just changed my Twitter profile to now say hashtag WMATA, hashtag RAC. So one step ahead. So on the budget, we're kind of now in this weird phase where we're planning for the next fiscal year already is coming back in, and we're having a very short window of time in terms of when ideas can be submitted. And talking here back from staff, we're really within the conceptual phase, not necessarily the facts and figures phase. So this is the time as the various committees are kind of thinking about the things that they want to do. One of the things to note is like everything that we do pretty much has like a financial, a budgetary tag to it. So it's one of those things that's sort of like getting that list and compiling that stuff together. And one of the things we're working on is like fair simplification and looking at that idea, seeing as if what it might potentially look like here for WMATA. I think the comment that the Chief of Safety, Pat, made today about how like Metro is really two systems kind of running in one is something that I think does kind of bleed into this conversation about fare simplification, because it is a commuter rail for some people, but for other people it's a traditional city subway system. And how does that bleed into what it looks like for simplifying fares in those kind of spaces? We're also looking at just other ideas about how, in terms of we can get more information out there to riders using Amplify or some of the other spaces in terms of polling the members out there for those kind of spaces. So that's what we're looking at kind of in budgets. I think, did I hit everything that we talked about on our specific? Did I miss anything, Barbara?
Well, one thing I want to just reiterate is that we have passed on some questions about, what would be the financial impact of doing this, or what was your analysis for that? And the question we got back, what we were asked to do is, we are in the idea gathering stage, and any idea, if it's something that people widely accept, I guess I need to be more clear on what that means, but anyway, right now they're just looking at ideas. Like, for instance, if we said, yeah, we really think there needs to be some late night consistent bus service that kind of mirrors what we used to have by rail, that is an idea. And we don't have to instantly have a financial analysis about what that would mean. It's just, what are the ideas that we want to put forward that we think are important to riders from our point of view, whatever those things are. If it, again, is to put forward, let's have automatic refunds. I mean, if it's, or whatever it is. That's where the 15-minute grace came from. It was an idea that came out with the last round. And so not every idea is going to make it all the way through, but what are those ideas? Instead of saying, well, we probably can't do that because of it, just what are the ideas we want to go to? One of the fundamental things about our current budget is it's based on fares that are distance-based. And I did hear that day at the conference, the Metro Summit we went to, that is best practice. That is definitely best practice. Yes, there are places that don't do that, but they have subsidies that support them. If they're going out long distances and they pay the same as the people in close, then they have other ways to cover that. We don't right now. And so any ideas that any of you have, whether you're on the budget committee or not, please forward them. You all have my email address, I know that for sure, but you can even just send them to Clarence, because you'll see him in your distributions, J. Clarence, it is. And we'd love to hear those, because we will have our budget meeting, which is next Thursday night, a week from tomorrow. We will have both someone from strategic planning and from the financial group helping us just to talk through some ideas. And we'd love to hear your ideas, let's say, by, you know, a week from today. So to Clarence, to me, to both of us, whatever you can do. We really want to hear them, whatever they are. You know, this is kind of like the brainstorm time. And remember, it's the fares you pay on the rail. It's the fares you pay on bus. It's peak versus non-peak. It's seniors versus disabled. It's complex. Think of all the fares that exist out there. It's convention people. It's passes like Select Pass. And it's not just rail commuters. You know? Like, I'd love to see a pass that works for people that don't commute 5 days a week, because there are so many of them. I don't know what it used to be. I don't know if the systems can support it, but I sure wish we had it. So please do that.
I do think the group does have a lot. The staff does actually produce a lot of work, and they're able to forward us like some presentations and stuff that they did work on in the past. There's also some of the work that was already done on some of those things, which we're willing to share with the rest of the group, so you can kind of get some context of where they're coming from.
If you plan on coming to that meeting and you haven't seen these budget documents that he's referring to, just let me know, and I've got them, and I'll forward them to you. Right now, I forward them to the people I expect to be there. I think you might be there, and you already got them. You got them before I got them, so because of your questions. Okay, I'm running out of time. Leadership and governance. We have three vacancies now on the RAC. That does not account for the empty spots, all of the empty spots at the table tonight. But Donald Hughes from Maryland resigned a little while back. He had not been able to come to anything but the first meeting, so he resigned and I talked to him. And then last month, just before the meeting that we had, we got a resignation from Major John Nelson, who was the vice chair for Virginia. He has resigned. And a week ago, I got a resignation from Chris Barnes from D.C. So we have three vacancies. And Joy, can you give us just a brief update of, I know you're doing the recruiting, well, it's not really recruiting, it's looking at what we got in the last recruiting cycle, and there were some good candidates in there, so. For majors, yeah. Okay. Well, yeah, she's trying to make when the next board meeting is at the end of July, and because there is no board meeting in August. So, thank you. For January, yeah. It's out there all the time, yeah. Okay. Christine, do you have a question about that?
Just quickly, so in regards to the recruiting process, if
we know people in Fairfax, do we direct them to the...
Absolutely.
Site? Okay.
And actually have them fill out the application as well.
To the RAC part of the website.
So that we can do the scoring and, you know, I don't...
For instance, I knew of someone from D.C. I knew of her because she was on the RAC before, just a year ago, and she took a year or two for a fellowship on transportation in Berlin. So, and she wants to do it again. She's been at our meetings, the last couple meetings, just as a public participant, Catherine Cordham. So she's a candidate that I put forward. She had applied. So hopefully we'll get movement on all of them perhaps two for sure. Okay. Okay. Okay, so I've lost our time for ideas. So let's talk about the process. Oh, no, I'm sorry. With Major Nelson's departure, we have a vacancy for the vice chair role in Virginia, and we need to elect a replacement for him in that role tonight by you put your sign down fast, didn't you, Christine? this person needs to be nominated by a Virginia member and seconded by a Virginia member, but then the whole membership will vote. I do nominate Lorraine Silva. She has also stepped forward saying she's willing to do it. She has done it before. And so I nominate her. Is there someone to second the nomination from Virginia? Christine is seconding that. Do you want to say anything briefly? You've been there, you've done that.
Well, I've been in the RAC since 2009, and the longest tenured RAC member.
She made it clear she's not the senior.
I'm not the senior member. I'm just the longest tenured.
I know he's 100, so he wins.
I served as vice chair. Virginia vice chair in 2012, I believe it was, when we started the quarterly meetings with the board members. So that was, that was the first time we actually had contact with the board members, direct contact, because everything then was through the staff or through the board secretaries or maybe an email. But face-to-face meetings, that was the first time we got that done in 2012, so that was an accomplishment that we had that then.
Considering it is 8:29, mm-hmm. I'd like to, if it's okay with you, I'd like to take a vote. First of all, I want to ask if there are any other nominations for Virginia chair. All right. So all those in favor of our one nominee, Lorraine Silva, please say aye.
Aye.
Nays? Abstentions? Thank you. It's unanimous. So you don't have to sales pitch us anymore. Thank you, Lorraine, for stepping up again. I know you've done it before. Okay, so those of you, we want to spend a few minutes after the meeting. Is that still true? For people that really want to be on the safety committee, there were some missed communications, and we've had a meeting, but we didn't agree on a time. So if you're on that group, please stay after just for a few minutes after the close. So we have not gotten to this whole thing of the week that Mr. Evans welcomed you all to send him emails, but Tom and I have had discussions, his communication director that was here last time. And it's an informal process, and we're going to just try it as I've already in this month sent him some ideas that came up either in one committee meeting or another that I just sent him ideas. And I think when it's an idea, I don't think we can reasonably expect we'll always get a response about, yeah, we're going to do that or not. But he also, when I was going back through my notes, he also asked us for updates. He said, tell me what's going on. I'm sensing in all my whatever that the riders on Safe Track are really fed up or they're really happy or they're really getting good communications, whatever. It can be updates. So I encourage any of you that want to, you can send them to me. I am not going to do any radical thing with them other than not send them in dribs and drabs. I'd like to send them, depending on how many we get, you know, maybe it's once a week or twice a week or whenever we get them, or maybe it's after this meeting if we have the time I had set aside for us to talk about them and go around the table and talk about our ideas. So what do you have to say about that?
Actually, I wanted to go back to the, I thought we were going to touch on the safety committee role.
No, after the meeting.
I'm sorry. For the people that are here.
No, you're right.
Whoever,
I skipped the safety report.
That's okay.
Yes, you're right.
For those people that are here, and if you are interested in the safety committee, we're going to meet briefly after this. Primarily, I'd like to establish a meeting time. So if you can think about that in a meeting time, in the meantime, for a meeting time, and a few other small items that we can talk about following this meeting tonight.
One thing about the safety committee report is that, you know, you did mention earlier we did have the drill at Greensboro Station near Tyson's. It was the lowest attendance we'd ever had, and that it was Christine and me and Joy. And I don't expect anyone to attend all of these, but I really do think it's a good for all of us to attend one of them.
What? And the next one.
Will had said he couldn't. He had a family thing come up. So now we're tied for having the most attendance.
And the next one is August 28th.
Yes.
So you can put it on your calendar. Sunday, August 28th.
And it's going to be, you never know if there's going to be another one like this. This one's under the river. Under the
on, over,
river.
Over.
Oh, I thought it was under.
Over.
Oh, it's over the river.
The bridge it goes, crosses over.
You're right. Why did I think it was just, it's crossing the Potomac.
Hopefully it's not under.
Yeah, you're right.
They're always, yes.
Yes.
6:30, actually.
August 28th? Cold? August? Where have you been? Go outside. I'm sorry about that. I'm sorry I cut out your time. Forgive me. So that's it. So I'll put out something because some of us already had to leave or weren't here tonight about the idea stuff. But really, it's an informal thing. And I would look at them for the sake of, well, is it something we've already asked for, or is it something that's the opposite of? I mean, I don't know. You know, I don't know what I'll do. But I'll tell you if it doesn't go on. I don't. You know, I'm not going to try to be, you know, the Solomon or anything. So. Things I did send them were ideas from, I think, the customer committee meeting, where it was, how about having a Twitter account for SafeTrack and not SafeTrack, you know, or what was the other one? Do you remember? No, you weren't there that night.
I'm not sure WMATA can handle any more Twitter accounts.
I know. Well, I passed the ideas along anyway. I did pass them along. And so feel free to do that. I didn't give anybody else a chance for an announcement or anything. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, to that end, one thing that might be helpful is to set up like a Google Doc or something that we can all contribute ideas to, and that way it's, you know, sort of a living document.
I'm happy to do that. Does that leave anybody out? And if it does, then that person can just tell me and I'll put it on it or something. There are some people that don't do Google Docs.
Well, that's fine.
Yeah. Yeah, but we can do that. Sure. I'm happy to do that. Yeah.
I don't know if you talked about this when I was out saying goodbye to everybody.
I'm sure we did.
You did something.
What is it?
I forgot.
No.
Organizing, yeah, they suggest, Steve Blackstone suggested field trips.
Yeah, I made a note of that.
Yeah. And I just wanted to get that moving ahead to see if anybody's interested.
No, I made a note to take action on that. Right.
What are you going to look at?
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you were talking about the operational.
The OCC. Pat said to contact him for the OCC.
It was. I have to acknowledge that it was not a WMATA employee that suggested we go tour that facility. So we have a few people that have to say okay.
Yeah. But however, Pat followed up with saying that contact him to see the OCC and not the NTSB.
I missed the part of that sentence.
Yes.
I was going to ask you about that. Okay. Anything else before we go to safety?
Oh, I was just going to say maybe on that note, maybe this is ambitious, a little back social, or a little get together.
You mean something other than our 6 o'clock period that people can't make it for because it's too early. Off-site. Hey, suggestions to her. No, do you want me to take them or do you want to take them? Or do you want, no, do you want to take them? See, so we'll take social. I noticed that the across the street this year is the grass is beautiful. There must be no hillside or hill whatever barbecue, hill country. Because the grass is immaculate. There was for years, for several summers, there was a barbecue place across the street. We did a little bit of gathering there, some of us. So
maybe we can reserve
social recommendations.
We can reserve our own private car on the metro and travel around a little bit.
A 1,000 car that you can't get the communications from, an old one. Or a really new one that you don't like. Get back there. Anything else? Okay, I'm officially going to declare.